Josh, have you ever looked back on your life and said, if I had to do it over again, I'd do it this way?
Every hour of every day.
Of course. I think, you know, there's several areas in my life that I would make some different decisions. But I got to tell you, at the top of the list, there have been some really boneheaded financial decisions I've made in my life. And that's going to be the topic that we're going to discuss today on Life Talks. My name is Dan. I'm with Josh Brom. Josh is the producer of Life Talks. Ben's a little under the weather today. And we are in the middle at Life Fellowship in of a series on biblical stewardship. So I thought that we would do a couple of episodes here just on money as it relates to. Last time we talked about teaching our kids just some practical things about biblical stewardship and how to handle our money. But today we're going to talk a little bit about financial mistakes that are very commonly made.
For us grown-ups.
So are you willing to share? Is there any financial mistake that
you go first and I'll try to think of like a good one off the top of my head.
Yeah, probably the biggest financial mistake I made was I overbought a house one time because I thought I was going to flip it in a few years and I moved to Miami and it was 2008 and there had been a dip in the real estate market and I thought I'm going to buy this house and I bought it for about 55-60% of its original asking price. And I thought, I'm going to ride this back up and I'm going to be able to retire early. And that was like 2008 when I did that, 2007 late. And that was there was a little dip and then there was a tremendous dip. And the tremendous dip caught me. And anyway, I ended up not having a job and I lost the house and my life savings. I didn't go into bankruptcy or anything, but I had to short sell the house like a lot of other people did.
So stressful.
And the house that I bought at 50% of the value, or 60%, I actually sold at 60% of what I paid for it.
And then
it hit my credit rating and I couldn't buy another house for 7 years.
I mean, especially if everyone's listened to the last episode and how grew up, that must have been torture.
Oh, it was devastating. To this day, I mean, see, I'm still talking about it.
Yeah.
And to do that, to start over financially, for the most part, at 48 years of age, that was not fun.
Okay.
But
maybe I should have gone first because I don't have anything. I don't know nearly that good. But the biggest one, and this does, it still sticks in my craw, whatever that old, you know, phrase is. But my wife and I once fell for a scam. We fell for an internet Craigslist scam. We were pretty young, like we've probably only been married like 3 or 4 years, and there was a really cheap, amazing deal for this
of course,
TV,
yeah.
And we had to learn how to do a direct money order, and I just was too kind of ignorant or naive to know the world about that, and so obviously we lost $400, I think, or whatever, and we still are so kind of mad about that. We Googled it later. If we had Googled it, we would have totally found they got, like, you know, it was dumb.
And that's, you know, I thought a principle we all ought to have tattooed between our eyes is if it's too good to be true,
exactly.
Because I got scammed out of a couple of thousand years ago. I have a family member who lost $7,000 in one of those internet scams. So they're awful. And that ought to be a whole episode sometime we talk about this. Because, you know, in the process, you know, there are biblical principles involved, at least for me, that I violated. Was I was trying to get rich quick. I was trying to, you know, to make money over.
Oh, we should talk about that if that's a biblical principle. I'm interested.
Well, I mean, that's my whole concept with gambling. I mean, I don't know if there's direct prohibitions against gambling, but, you know, is it a good thing to gain money over somebody else's losses knowingly? And in order for you to make money at gambling, somebody else has to lose that money, right?
We're going to have to save this for another episode. I have thoughts.
And I don't want to be legalistic on it. And I grew up in, you know, a culture that, like, you know, any form of gambling was just verboten. My view now is I don't mind the lottery because every dollar the government gets off the lottery is one less dollar they're trying to come after me for, and I don't play the lottery at all. And so,
how do you feel about like low end like poker games? I have a few times put $20 and played poker with some friends for an evening.
I look at that kind of like as entertainment. I used to go to the arcade when I was in college.
Yeah,
I knew that I wasn't going to win a free game at the pinball or whatever, but.
Right.
I,
is fun to play.
It's fun to play. So if you look at it that way, the problem is it's just like people drinking alcohol. There are some people who can have a beer, a glass of wine and walk away from it. And then there are other people who get, you know, sloshed. And, and so then that crosses the line. Well, I think if you're gambling money you don't have, if you're gambling and you don't tithe, I think there's a lot of principles.
Are you being a bad steward in other areas? Exactly.
But so let's talk about some financial mistakes we make. So here's the first one that if we don't go past this one, then I think I've said everything I need to say, is that we don't make a plan. And by saying I don't make a plan, I'm really saying we don't make a budget. So a failure to plan is a plan for failure. And if we don't have a budget, and yet I'm going to guess that listening to me right now, 85% of the people do not have a budget that they live off of. And as a result, they just kind of operate by the seat of their pants, and they manage from crisis to crisis because they don't have a plan. So I'm not going to tell everybody how to do a budget today. I'm just going to say this. There are tons of material out there. The one that, you know, Christians use a lot is Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University. And I would say I don't know of a better one than that. There's Crown Financial Planning. There's others. Just pick one and do it and make your plan. But for me, when I was young, my grandfather taught me, Dan, save 10% of everything you make and do it the first thing you do so you never see it. All my life, I have taken the first dime, given it to the Lord. I have taken the second dime and put it in a savings account. My entire life, I have done that, and it has served me well. So not all my decisions have been good decisions. But living by a budget has been a good decision for me. Before I would buy a house, if I didn't violate it, which is the one time I did violate it, but if I didn't violate it, I would say, okay, I know that I should not be spending more than, at that time, it was 40% of my gross income on housing, including my utilities. And so I'd figure out what's the maximum amount I could afford to have a plan. And that way you don't get into the situation that you do.
Just on the budgeting thing, I'll just add. So my wife and I have recently been – have completely reworking how we do finances because we suddenly kind of realized how – I mean, there's been a lot of kind of –
You wake up one morning, you see gray in your beard.
You see a – there's a lot of that. And a lot of, you know, more red than black or whatever in the ledger or whatever. And so – going back to budgeting more carefully was one of the things we wanted to do. And I'll just tell, for some people who have a hard time with like writing down the checkbook thing, there's some really good apps at this point that will do a lot of this for you. So,
and Dave Ramsey,
for example,
Dave Ramsey has a great tool for that too. It's a full budget plan, and it's free. And the thing, there are multiple free apps, free tools, and you got to, you know, slog through the ads and so forth. But use a plan. It's it's really simple. Number two is, the second mistake is akin to it, is we live paycheck to paycheck. The problem with living paycheck to paycheck is life does not occur from paycheck to paycheck. And so when we don't look ahead, which brings me to my third one, is we don't plan ahead. So living paycheck to paycheck and not planning ahead, not having a budget, those three things are just rudimentary. But here's the deal. It does not, it should not come as a surprise to any of us. If you have a daughter, at some point she's going to want to get married. If you have children, and you know,
they might want food.
That's true on the short term. On the long term, you know that you may want to help them somewhat with college. By the way, I'm not a proponent that parents owe their kids a college education. Some people are. If you can afford that, God bless you. But I don't necessarily believe – I don't think you're a bad parent if you don't. And I'm going to talk about college education just a little bit. But the bottom line is there are, you know, you're going to die sometime. You know you're going to have to replace your car periodically. There are things that you know that Christmas comes once a year. So if you live paycheck to paycheck,
your wife's birthday,
a big anniversary, a 5, 10, 15, 20, they come once a night. What are you doing to prepare for those? My mom was so good at this, and she would take cash out in this, you know, different time, and she would place it in an envelope. And Dave Ramsey's a big proponent on the envelope plan. But she would put, for Christmas, she'd put $20 a paycheck in so that when Christmas time came, and we didn't even have credit cards most of the time when I was growing up. The credit cards didn't even come into fashion until I was in my late teens. But my dad never used a credit card in his entire life, and he died when I was 22. So, but he'd squirrel money aside. And being able to do that, whether it's in a savings account, using an app, using a spreadsheet, using envelopes, however you do that. I do that with my cars. You know, I know.
Envelopes?
Really? Yeah, I know that's really weird. But for instance, if somebody gives me $100 for a birthday present, or if I do a wedding and somebody gives me $200 or $300 for that, or if I do a funeral and, you know, the funeral is prepaid and they give me, you know, I don't charge for any of these things, but sometimes people are kind and give me money. I take that money instead of spending.
I charge for it.
Well, I could make a case.
You're nice.
I take the money and I cash the check and I put it in an account. And that way I know how much money I have toward a car. And I do not finance my cars. I drive a Genesis. It's a 2016. It's not new. Yeah. I paid $17,000 for it, but I literally paid for my car with $100 bills.
Really?
I walked in there with $100 bills. And I had saved for—
Did you get a bunch of Lux?
I did. I mean, it was almost like I was a drug launderer or drug guy or something. But I had kept it in a safe. I have a safe. But I had saved it $100 at a time for about 7 or 8 years.
Wow.
And I just a little bit here, a little bit there. That's how I got it. So, and again, I'm not saying you have to do it the way Dan does it, but I think you ought to have There's a mentality that there, says, though. So if you're making a car, if you're making a car payment, for instance, when the car payment stops, you've paid it off and you still got life left in your car, make the car payment to yourself. Accrue that car payment. So then you have the down payment or maybe the whole payment for the next time you buy your car. You're already used to living the way you're living.
Right.
So that way, I also do that with raises. So if I get a raise, then instead of saying, oh, great, I can increase my way of living, I save more. And that's how I was able to start saving for retirement when I would get a raise. Rather than to take the money and put it into my budget, I took the money and put it into retirement until I was saving 10% of my income for retirement. So you take these incremental steps. You may not be able to get to, you know, a full car or a full 10% for savings or retirement, but you can make incremental steps bit by bit.
So how do you balance between, because earlier you talked about, you know, that there is maybe a too extreme end of savings where you end up with $700,000 when you die, but you were living in a shack or whatever.
Cutting your own firewood at 75.
So like clearly, like even like I think the fact that you, when you do raises, that you are still like putting more into savings is pretty significant. I bet that is not the most common thing. And so how do you balance between, do you ever do quality of life increases? And if so, like, how are you balancing between those things? How should other people try to not fall too far on one end?
Yeah. And I don't know if there's a hard rule of thumb on that.
Sure there's not.
Yeah. Because, and that's why you have to sit down and have a plan with your spouse, sit down and have a plan, set your objectives. And again, many times it becomes uncomfortable. Many times we get frustrated. It causes strife with our spouse. Well, you should make more money, or you should go back to work, or you should do, you shouldn't spend so much money. And then, so you shut down and then you never make a plan and then you get into crisis. And it's not just one person's responsibility. It is both people's, because there's only two things that impact your financial status. There are two things. Your income and your outflow. Those are the only two factors. So in order to live within your means, and living within your means says this, I'm not going to spend more than I make. Really simple, really basic. At the end of the month, I'm not going to spend more money than I actually made. So that being the case, then you have one of two things that you can do. You can either increase your income or you can decrease your expenditures. So when you put it that simple, I know he's like, duh, don't be condescending. No, it's really that simple. And there have been times when my wife and I, when I got married, my annual salary was $10,400 a year. My wife's annual salary was $10,800 a year because she had been teaching 2 years longer than I had. So together, that was back in the olden days. Even in the olden days, that was dirt. It was about 5 and a quarter an hour. That's what we were being paid. And we were school teachers. We were professionals. So I knew we couldn't, she and I couldn't live together on $21,000 a year.
Right.
So I started tutoring students at $10 an hour. Mm-hmm. That was really
it's
great.
A good motivator.
Because that was twice what I was making when I was standing in front of 30 students. And I'm thinking, well, I can tutor two students at the same time. That's $20 an hour. Then I discovered if there are several students who need to do this part of English, I can do five students or seven students at same time, teach it like a class, charge them all $10 an hour. Now I'm at $70 an hour. And that sounds like really basic or whatever.
No,
but all of a sudden, I doubled my income.
Yeah.
By working on Saturdays and after school and so forth to be able to do that. And all my life, I've worked a second job. Wow. All my life, I've worked a second job. And whether it was finding things at garage sales and reselling them, or whether it was buying postcards by the thousands on eBay and then listing them individually and letting people bid on them, I was making $1,000 a month selling postcards on eBay for probably 4 or 5 years.
Were you sending them one at a time?
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you make money?
Because they were collectible. They were.
Oh, they were, okay.
But see, like, so somebody would collect postcards for years and years and years. Then they would die, and their heirs would find a box of 10,000 postcards in their garage.
Gotcha.
And they would list them, and I would buy them.
That was a collectible thing like coins. Yeah. That's so
interesting.
I've
sold postcards for as much as $100 for one postcard.
Wow. Okay, so I want to ask you a question.
Sold a can of Spam for $54.
The first can of Spam ever made?
It was from Korea.
Wow.
And I sold it for $54 because somebody collected Spam. There is always a fool who's willing to be parted from their money if you can find them.
So, that's
and you say, that's so.
A good example of that.
Yeah, I mean, you can find ways to make money, or you can complain that you don't have enough money.
Okay. For the 75% or so of the parents listening who, like me, have gone into marriage and family with intentions like what you're saying, and maybe did a good job for a long time of living below our means, not doing credit card stuff, until a crisis happened.
Yeah.
And some of us have like health crises happen that just you don't expect. Someone gets in a huge accident or whatever. And like for us, that's kind of how credit card debt began, was we had a lot of stuff with our kids and developmental stuff or whatever. And so talk to us.
Sure.
Yeah.
And again, sometimes debt happens.
Yeah.
Within the first 4 years of our marriage, my wife had four major surgeries. Mm. And we maxed out on our deductible.
Wow.
And we lost three babies. We wanted to start adopting children.
Wow.
In those days, it cost about between $5,000 and $7,000 to adopt. Now, if you're making $20,000 a year, remember, that's a lot of money.
That's worth of it.
So all of those became factors. So here's the, for hospital bills, we discovered this, that you didn't have to pay them off immediately. As long as you talked to them and paid them off month by month, that they would, and eventually they will forgive a portion of it or they'll make a deal with you. But why should I put it on my 21% credit card when they were willing to hold the note and let me pay $50 a month? So I paid hospital bills for years and years and years at $50 a month.
Yep.
As long as I kept my end of the deal, they were happy with it. Yep. Hospitals are one of the easiest actually people to work with.
Yep.
But when it came time to adopting, that's why I started going out and speaking. And then I said, well, people like my lectures. I had a lecture called Raising Beaver Cleaver Kids in a Bart Simpson World.
That's such a good title.
It was aged. And I put it on a cassette tape. And I made copies of it. I put a little sticker on it, and I sold about $12,000 worth of those over the years.
Wow!
And that's how I paid for two of my kids.
Good for you.
So you have to be creative. I'm not smart, and I'm not an entrepreneur.
You are smart.
Well, I'm just desperate times create desperate solutions, I guess. But what I'm simply saying is, you only got two options.
Yeah.
And we were already poor, so we couldn't reduce our expenses. We had to increase our income.
Yeah.
We made a decision. We wanted Julie to be home with the kids. Mm. We didn't get to do that overnight. We did it gradually.
Yeah.
And the way we did it gradually, again, was with a plan until we got to the point where she didn't have to work. But that meant I had to work two jobs. And that's one of the reasons I work two jobs. And because we had, some disability issues in my children as well.
Yeah.
That had to last for a long time. So you make decisions and you make your plan and you work your plan, which kind of goes, to the other thing is be so super careful about debt.
Yeah.
Some people use credit cards as float.
Hmm.
So
credit
cards are honestly like little slave owners.
Yeah.
We have to watch out for them because what starts out as $1,000, oh, my car broke down. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have enough money to fix it. The reason you don't have enough money to fix it is because you didn't think ahead. So one of the things, and you ask, how do you get through these, is you have to plan for emergencies.
Yeah.
My rule of thumb is I like to have 3 to 6 months in a savings account somewhere of expenses that, you know, that cover the things I must cover. Hmm. It doesn't cover eating out and going to the movies, but the things I must cover, I like to have 3 to 6 months so that I can survive this. I've been unemployed twice and been able to survive it because I had done this in advance. I put it in an account and I forget it. I don't touch it. Hmm. I put it in an interest-bearing account and I can get to it if I need to, but I don't ever go to it. And that's my emergency fund. Then if my car breaks down, and I had a $1,600 transmission go out. Okay, had the money there. Mm. If somebody gets sick, if there's an emergency surgery, if these kind of things come up, then we could go to that. But again, you can't say, well, we're going to do that and think that in 2 months you're going to be in that situation. It takes a few years of discipline. Yeah. But here's the cool thing about money. And you talked about compound interest and so forth. It creates momentum.
Yeah.
And the more momentum you move forward, then – okay, so now I've got this done. Now I can save for retirement.
Yeah.
I got this done. Now I can pay off my debt. Yeah. I got this done. Now I can look at investments. I can look at a vacation. Yeah. I'm not saying you should never have fun, but if you know you're going to take a vacation every year, put $100 a paycheck aside so that when you get there, you don't put it on your credit card.
Yeah.
And that's called using credit card as float.
Yeah.
If you're putting your Christmas on your credit card and then paying it off between January and April, that's using credit cards as float.
Yeah.
But what you're doing is you're adding to the cost of your Christmas somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 15% because you're paying that interest for those months.
Yeah.
And it's annualized at 22%. So the longer you take it out, you could pay it. If it takes you a year, it takes you 22. That thing you paid $100 for now costs you $122. Yeah. So you have to watch out for those things.
Yeah.
Another mistake we make is simply living above our means. Mm. And some of this happens when we overspend early. All right. You do not get to live in your parents' house for your first house. Ask your parents what their first house was like. Unless your parents' last name is Rockefeller or Bezos, you don't get to live in a 5-bedroom house, your first house. You're going to live in a 2-bedroom or a 3-bedroom house. And you don't get to drive a brand new car. You're going to drive a junker, and you're going to have to do a used car.
Yep.
Your first baby will not remember what they slept in.
Yep.
If you put your baby in a cardboard box, they will grow up and not be one bit different than if you bought them a $500 cradle at the Baby R Us store. They don't have Baby R Us anymore, do they? But I knew somebody who got on their first baby, they spent $30,000 putting a nursery together. $30,000.
That's insane.
And I also will tell you that 3 years later, they got divorced. And one of the reasons they got divorced is they were fighting all the time, and they were fighting all the time because they were in debt. I've had people say, we're not going to have children until we can afford our dream house.
Oof.
This kind of thinking is very dangerous. You can't have it all.
Yeah.
Delay your gratification.
Yeah.
Make a plan.
Yeah.
And you'll eventually attain it, just like your parents do. You say, yeah, but my friends, my neighbors, the people I watch on TikTok, don't try to keep up with the Joneses. Yeah. You live your life.
Yeah.
Live it with balance. And if you don't live above your means, you won't have near the stress they have either. And I got to tell you, living a happy life is better than living an overly affluent life.
Yeah.
So the last thing I want to say is, because we're out of time, is one of the mistakes we make is we don't educate ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Read some books.
Yes.
Take a Financial Peace University class.
Mm-hmm.
Get a financial advisor. I have a financial advisor. I talked to him last month. And you know, as I'm coming up to retirement, I'm saying, how do I do this? What do I do this? I spent 1 hour of my time with him. I pay him for his hour.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me some advice I needed to hear, some advice I didn't want to hear, some advice I didn't like.
Yeah.
But he gave me the advice. So you can't borrow character, but you can borrow brains. So have good character and borrow somebody else's brains and educate yourself and let people do that.
There's I've got a whole so bunch more. So many resources on YouTube for learning almost anything at this point.
But we let the topic overwhelm us, Josh, and that's the thing. And so we shut down.
Yeah.
We know that you're going to feel embarrassed because you're in debt. You know you're going to be frustrated because you feel like, I should take care of my spouse better, or I should have stayed in college, or I shouldn't have moved this, or we shouldn't have bought that. Now I'm embarrassed. Get over that. Make a plan.
Mm-hmm.
How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Yeah. Better to start now than never.
Exactly. And if you do it the right way, live below your means, find ways to increase your income, be generous to God and to others, have a, you know, work your plan your work, don't get sidetracked, you will eventually get to a point where you don't have to sweat it. We live in the greatest economy, the greatest country the world has ever known. And then a lot of people talk about poverty in America. Poverty in America is nothing compared to poverty around the rest of the world. The problem we have in America is not a poverty problem. It's a spending problem. It's a lack of discipline. And I'm not going to say there's not legitimately poor people. Please don't let me say that. But let me just tell you this. I have people all the time wanting me to give them money, and they get their nails done every week. Yeah. And they have cable TV.
Yeah.
And they drive a $600 a month car payment.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you this, if you want to live your life that way and you don't have enough income to do that, you are going to feel poor.
Yeah.
But you don't have to.
Yeah. Great point.
Lots more things I could say, but I'm out of time. Josh, thanks always for joining me on the podcast.
Fun folks, as always.
You ever want to give us a suggestion you'd like to have us consider when Ben is back, send it to us at lifetalks@lifecharlotte.com. Until next time, thanks as always for joining us at Life Talks.
You've been listening to Life Talks. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. Share this podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to let your friends and family know about Life Talks. We'd love to hear from you as well, so leave a comment and let us know your thoughts on this episode or any other topics we've discussed. Life Talks is a ministry of Life Fellowship in Cornelius, North Carolina. For more information on Life Talks or Life Fellowship, visit lifecharlotte.com, or you can find us on Facebook at Life Fellowship Charlotte.